Welcome back to The Federal Drive with Tom Temin, federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. Genomics and other medical and health research areas are producing some gigantic data sets. To use them in research, scientists need access to these data sets. They're too big to copy and distribute. So the National Institutes of Health hopes to establish what it calls a data commons in the cloud. It's enlisted the help of researchers and industry to design the commons and how it might work. I spoke with NIH's Alastair Thompson, Chief Information Officer of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, about this ambitious project.
The Data Commons is in response to a recognition that we are undergoing a tsunami of data, a lot of it driven by the Human Genome Project and the fact that it now only costs $800 to sequence a human genome. So we have petabytes of data which is coming into the NIH for genomic, but also for imaging and a variety of other data.
And where is it coming from?
It's coming from all of our grantees. The NIH, with a budget of $33 billion, gives 85% of it away to grantees, researchers across the country. And they are generating vast amounts of data, and we need to make it available so that researchers can use it. And if it's sitting in their data center, it's not available. And so the Data Commons is aimed at making that data accessible to them, allowing them to compute on it and conduct analyses in a way that has never been done before. And in fact, is the only way that we can make the data available.
I guess the only other alternative would be to replicate it and send it to everybody, but that's not really practical.
No, in terms of the amount of data, the Transomics for Precision Medicine, TopMed data that NHLBI has, is currently at 2 petabytes. That's 100,000 whole genome sequences. But it's going to be shortly at about 17 petabytes. You can't download that amount of data.
Sure, and sounds like supercomputing level types of requirements.
It is. To conduct the analyses on that kind of scale of genomic data requires massive compute, hundreds of thousands of compute nodes. And again, it's just not practical to do that in your local research institution's data center. The only practical way to do it is in the cloud.
And is the data all genomically related, or are there also scans and disease pictures and normal clinical types of images that might be generated?
So our big focus at the moment is genomic data, but certainly imaging data. NHLBI has over 1 million images from our research studies. We've got to deal with that data as well. And there are other studies in other parts of NIH, the Brain Initiative, the All of Us program, Precision Medicine Initiative, that are generating huge amounts of data too. And a lot of that is electronic health records and other data. It's, as I said earlier, it's a tsunami of data that in order to make use of it, we've got to find a new way of operating.
Now, you're the CIO of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. Are you doing this on behalf of the full NIH?
Yeah, that's right. So there's a team of us. This is actually a funded through the NIH Common Fund, which is set up by Congress to do trans-NIH activities. And so there's a group of us, particularly from the NHLBI and the National Human Genome Research Institute, that are working on this.
Now, when scientists and clinicians, I guess, generate genomic data, what is it they're doing in the first place? Why would this be generated?
So a lot of what they're looking for are the links between genetic variation and disease. So a lot of these studies are using what they call genome-wide association studies. So they're looking for a signal in vast amounts of data which says that this particular genetic variation is associated with a disease, whether it's looking for a signal for cancer to see what actually causes a tumor to grow, or in our case at NHLBI, what are the links for heart disease, for obesity? What's the genetics of that so that we can, in a very targeted way, create treatments for the disease.
So at the heart of many of these data sets, then, are individuals, peoples with some sort of disease.
Very much so. And one of the big challenges that we have in all of this is that those individual people have granted access to that data to researchers for very specific purposes. We've gained informed consent from them. And so one of our challenges is how do we make this data available while we respect the wishes of those patients as to how their data is used. And so one of the challenges for the data commons is to make the data available, but provide a good way where patients can be involved in how their data is used for research.
And I want to get into that privacy issue a little bit more deeply, but first I wanted to ask about a recent award you made to two Harvard researchers to develop the platform itself, the Data Commons platform. Tell us about that award. Was it a grant, and what will work be done under it?
So the award is actually to much more than the two Harvard researchers. There are actually 10 awards which go to researchers across the country. Both academic institutions and, very interestingly for NIH, two commercial entities. And we actually used a different mechanism for this to our usual grant or research and development contract. We used an other transaction, which is an authority granted by Congress fairly recently, particularly for funding of innovative new research. And what this allows us to do is to form public-private partnerships. And so more than just kind of throwing the money at them and saying, hey, go do this, we are deeply involved with the 10 grantees who come from across the country in working out what we need to do to implement this. But at the same time, we're doing it in a way that allows us to tap into their innovation in a better way than you could with a contract, for instance. If I'm being frank, the government is not particularly good at large IT projects. And so we're really letting industry and the academic community drive this.
We're speaking with Alastair Thompson, Chief Information Officer at the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. And so these 10 awardees, if I guess we'll call them those, they are to develop the architecture for this Data Commons platform?
So, yeah. There's a set of key capabilities that were made note of during the award, which ranges from developing ways to assess fairness for data that's findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable, so that we know that this is working by the fact that we can assess the data's fairness. Is it available to people? Are they actually able to use it? To cloud-agnostic architectures. The government is not in the business of picking winners and losers, if you like, about amongst cloud providers. And so what we do in the Data Commons has to be portable across all the major cloud providers. And so those key capabilities are being implemented by the 10 awardees with different focuses for each of the teams in a variety of ways. One of the things that makes the NIH Data Commons a little different to other sort of data-driven access things that have gone on, is that we're looking for multiple solutions. Each of the awardees has certain expertise, a certain philosophy of the way that they build things that we want to include in the Data Commons and enable them to innovate on top of a core platform, but provide the uniqueness. And so over time, we actually see that these awardees are all going to be in there with different solutions that are going to work for different kinds of science, for different research needs, and for different profiles of data.
And I'm wondering if there's anything that you can learn or have learned, say, from NOAA, for example, which operates the National Weather Service, or from some of the Energy Department components that have long history with big data sets and supercomputing, which with shared use.
And so certainly some of our awardees have worked with, in various ways, those organizations. Genomic data in particular is a little different. One of the interesting things about it is that each individual sample is very large. So an individual whole genome sequence is about 20 gigabytes. And so when you get to, 100,000 of them, you're dealing with very large amounts of data. And unlike weather data, which is, lots and lots of very small discrete measurements, working with this kind of data is just fundamentally different from an IT perspective. And that's why we need to do something which is different and innovative. While there are lessons to be learned from how do we deal with that very large amount of data, it's a different kind of data science that we're dealing with genomic data.
Yeah, that tends to be floating point and Fortran oriented, and I guess yours is very different.
It is. Some of the techniques in data science are certainly applicable. And one of the interesting things we've found is that a lot of the researchers who are working with this data are actually coming from non-biological fields. Not long ago, the NHLBI did a challenge looking at MRI data, and the winner of that challenge actually came from the financial industry. So the algorithms that are being developed in machine learning, artificial intelligence, are coming from a very broad range of domains, and we want to be able to leverage that as much as we can with the more conventional sort of health-related researchers that we're working with in this program.
In building a data commons for the sharing of petabyte-sized data sets, NIH is turning not only to academic researchers for advice, but also to industry. That's because the commons is to be hosted in commercial clouds. In part two of my interview, Alastair Thompson, CIO of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, named the companies and the work they'll do.
There's actually three commercial companies in this. One is called Seven Bridges Genomics. Seven Bridges has been working with the NIH for quite a while now, including on the National Cancer Institute's Cancer Genome Atlas, but a variety of other programs. They're very focused on the analysis of genetic data. And they've partnered with a company called Repositive, and then a very large company called Elsevier, who has great expertise in the management of data, the indexing of data. And interestingly, they're also partnered with a group from the Veterans Administration, Million Veterans Program, that are also contributing the work that they've done in that team. And I think this goes to the innovative approach that the other transaction authority provides. It's not just academia, it's not just nonprofits, but it's commercial and, in fact, government-funded entities that are coming to the table to do something which is absolutely unique.
And Elsevier, I guess, is a large publisher of medical journals. They also, I believe, have LexisNexis, so they know big data.
Indeed. And so they're bringing expertise that is actually fairly rare to get at in the government. But clearly they see that there is benefit for them to be involved in this. And as I said earlier, you know, the other transaction is about public-private partnership. And so one of our goals with the Data Commons is to kind of change the business model where today, essentially, if NIH wants data available to people, we have to fund it. But we recognize that the gravity of the data we have, the value of it, can bring other players. And so part of the Data Commons goal is to build a platform which others can leverage for commercial benefit. If they can use the data while respecting the consents of the patients and build products on it that make them money, that's actually to the benefit of the NIH because we don't have to pay as much to store the data, to compute on the data, plus to society in general as those organizations are conducting research and putting that knowledge back into the science community.
Now, you have stated that this project will ultimately be hosted in commercial clouds. How do the cloud providers get involved, and how do you ensure that what they invest in and the architectures they build would be compatible with something this vast?
So the three biggest cloud providers are Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, and Google Cloud Platform are actually teamed in several of the teams that have been awarded. And so they're very directly engaged, in particular with the University of California, Santa Cruz, who's also working with the Chan Zuckerberg Foundation on the Human Cell Atlas program. They're all part of this, and the cloud providers have actually provided their engineering expertise to be directly involved in this. And this goes to the changing business model that we're talking about it. Obviously, the cloud providers see some commercial benefit in this. And so having them engaged directly is very, very important to the program. We see them helping with portability between them, but also helping to embed some of the technologies that we need to be able to deal with this massive data very deeply into their cloud stacks. Again, the other transaction authority allows us to do something which is very different to what you would normally expect from a government-funded project.
We're speaking with Alastair Thompson, Chief Information Officer at the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. And how do you handle the privacy and security considerations for data sets that are so gigantic that will be accessed by perhaps thousands of people that you don't know and also involve, at some level, individually identifiable information?
So this actually goes beyond just the question of individually identifiable information. You know, there are good techniques which exist today and are being developed further as part of this program to protect the privacy. And in fact, having this in the cloud is an advantage. You know, an observation is that the amount of money that these cloud providers spend on security and protecting data it dwarfs anything that the government could spend. And so the data is actually safer from an IT security perspective in the cloud than it would be in one of our own data centers. The real challenge for this, though, is really around respecting the consent provided by the patients who have provided this data. Some of them are fine with their data being used for whatever purpose in research that they that you can think of. Others, for instance, only want it used by nonprofits. They don't want for-profit organizations accessing their data. You know, it's their right to make a decision like that. But sometimes really good research, that can be a barrier to it. And so one of the things that we'll be looking at in the Data Commons is how to not only protect and respect those consents, but mechanisms where people can be reconsented for a specific research project and allow them to say, yeah, I want it used within the scope of what you're doing, but with a different constraint. I may see a project where while I said that I wanted my data only used for cardiovascular disease, I see something which is lung disease related where I could my data could contribute. And so I want to say, yeah, you can do that. And so we're looking at techniques, including blockchain, as a mechanism to store those consents in a cryptographic manner so that not only is the consent very well defined and controlled, but it actually empowers patients to make a new decision and have that stored immutably on the blockchain and know that it's only being used within the way that they wanted it to be used, because all of the use of it, the download of it, is controlled within a technology like blockchain.
Because everybody likes to rail against drug companies, but in fact, they also do a lot of original research, which can result in cures. So, yes, they get the profit from that, but on the other hand, the world gets the cure.
Right. And you know, part of the Data Commons is to, you know, where people are okay with their data being used by pharma companies or biotech, that it can be used. There's a barrier for a lot of those companies that are investing billions of dollars, far beyond what the NIH budget is, in drug development. But they can't access any of this publicly funded data. Part of the Data Commons goal is to enable them to do it, respecting the consents, and put their data together with NIH-generated data. And again, as you say, to generate new cures.
And just briefly, how is this all operationalized? You've got these 10 teams working on the basic architecture and design and applications for the commons. They've got 4 years to do it. Do they meet in person? Do you have a platform for collaborating on the collaboration? How does it all work?
So one of the things I say about the Data Commons is that the government's role here is to get out of their way. And so the teams have established their own collaboration methods. There's a group at University of Maryland who is taking on a role of a coordinating center, Dr. Owen White. And he is really facilitating bringing the groups together. We had a face-to-face meeting in December. We'll be having another one coming up sometime in the next few months. but they're regularly talking with one another. They're using Slack.com, which is a tool that researchers commonly use for collaboration. And they're really driving this forward themselves. If I'm being frank, the government is sometimes not very good at integrating these kinds of large projects. And so one of our goals here is to allow the research community to be the integrator, to allow kind of self-forming teams to develop. And there's some risk in that. Our observation is that some of these collaborations are working really well. Some of them not so much. But the team is, having been going for about 6 months now. It's forming well, and it's evolving. Again, one of the advantages of the other transaction authority is that we can adapt and adjust very, very quickly. And as they progress through, we expect to be renegotiating and modifying the awards pretty regularly as they evolve, as they potentially need to bring in new partners to help with the development of it or testing of it or whatever else it is. But very much we want to allow the consortium that's been formed to lead this. There's a model that's been used in DARPA fairly frequently in the past and has been very effective at driving innovation at a pace which is very unusual.
Sounds like you've got a project that will last the rest of your career.
Potentially, yes, it could.
Alistair Thompson is CIO of the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute at the National Institutes of Health. Find a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One. Still to come on Federal News Radio, human beings exist in three dimensions. This NIH researcher is working to move medicine and medical science deeper into 3D also. It's the Federal Drive with Tom Temin, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.